So we officially made a siyum last time on the Ten Commandments, and we're going to finish now the rest of the mitzvahs that are found in Parshas Yisro. So the Sefer HaChinuch here in the next mitzvah did something that I already did when I was talking about the mitzvah not to make idols for purposes of Avodah Zarah. So when I was talking about this year, I basically limited my discussion to pictures of people, images of people. So here, the Sefer HaChinuch, and I sort of encroached on the Sefer HaChinuch's territory in this mitzvah as well, but here he goes into a little bit more specifically, and also he limits his discussion to the images of people, which is not exactly the right impression. I'm not sure exactly why he does that, and I will get to that in a second. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, Mitzvah Lametes, the 39th mitzvah, is Shelo Lasos Tzuros Afilu Lenoi, that one should not make images, even if they're explicitly not for the purposes of Avodah Zarah. You don't have any intention to bow down to them. You don't think anyone's going to bow down to them. Yeah, there's a separate mitzvah, not to make images, not to make any graven images, even not for Avodah Zarah purposes. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, Shelo lasos tzuras adam mishum davar. One cannot make an image of a person from any material. Hein mi matchos, hein mi eitz ve'evan v'zulasam, whether metal or wood or stone. Vafilu lenoi, even just to look pretty. Shenemar lo sa sun iti. You shall not make with me. The pasuk says, "Lo sasuni ti eloi chesa veloheizav." You shall not make with me. Then there's a stop, according to the trup, as we read it. There's a stop. You shall not make with me. And then it says, "Gods of silver and gods of gold, you shall not make for yourselves." So just from the beginning, so it sounds like a little bit like the whole pasuk is just talking about gods of silver and gods of gold. But the chachamim have a different interpretation of the pasuk, where they say, "V'darshu zichronim libracha." The sages tell us, Lo sasun iti, the first part is to be taken by itself. Lo sasun iti, you shall not make with me. In other words, you shall not make something that's with me. So what does that mean? Lo sasun osi, don't make images of me. So what does it mean? There's no such thing as God doesn't have an image, as we discussed earlier. It's God doesn't have any form whatsoever, according to the Rambam. Someone who believes that is a heretic. Kalomar, lo sasun dimyon osatsur. You shouldn't make anything that suggests that form. So what does that mean? The hainu guf adam. So that the sages, as a long string of interpretations, assume that in the final analysis, what this really means is to not make the images of a human being. Shekosafti olebis orasi. So God writes regarding a human being in the Torah, nase adam mitzalmenu, that we should make man in our image. So, obviously it doesn't mean literal physical image, it just means that human beings have some godly attributes. What it means is, of course, is not the way it looks, because God doesn't have any physical image, but it just means that we have seichel, we have more understanding than the animals along the lines of God. Yeah. So another interpretation, which the Sefer HaChinuch does not bring here, which is also forbidden, the Gemara tells us, is lo sasun iti, you shall not make the things that are with me. The Gemara says, lo sasun kidmus mishamshai shemishamshim lefanai bamarom. So lo sasun iti, you shall not make with me, you shall not make the things that are up in the heavens with God, so to speak. So also one is not, even though, again, like I did in the shir a few weeks ago, where I only mentioned... incorrectly, I only mentioned images of human beings when I was discussing the Avodah Zarah aspect of this. It's also you're not allowed to make images of the stars, the sun, the moon, to depict maybe what you think angels might look like. That's also forbidden. Though the Rambam sounds like one does not receive the penalty of Malkus, of lashes, for making images of stars and the moon, only for images of people. It's not exactly clear why the Rambam would hold that, but the Rambam says it's also to make human images, and if you receive the penalty of Malkus. Then he goes on, he says, and it's also also to make stars and the moon. So it's not exactly clear why he differentiates. Yeah. There is a difference between images of people and images of the stars and moons, is that, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, the images of people are only prohibited if they are if they're raised. A picture, a painting of a person is fine. It's only a sculpture, like you said, or some sort of embossed image. That's why we talked about the difference between a signet ring. That if there's a signet ring that has an embossed figure on it, so you're not allowed to wear it, but you're allowed to stamp with it because it creates a sunken image. But if the image on the ring, on the signet, is sunken, then when you sign with it, it's put it in wax, then the image on the wax is raised. So then you're allowed to wear it, but you're not allowed to stamp with it because it creates a raised image. Umash Amar Bitzalmenu al chilek haseichel shabam reitzai. Fine. So when God says that we're going to create man in our image, it's talking about intelligence. That God is the main source of all intelligence. He's the ultimate intelligence. There's no other similarity between God and any of God's creations, only the fact that he endowed human beings with some sort of, with a greater understanding than the rest of the creatures. So it's somewhere in between the understanding of animals and God's understanding. But we can talk, we can express ourselves, we have more godly attributes than just regular animals, so therefore we're considered to be created in God's image. What we're talking about before was the prohibition of making an idol for the purpose of worship. We shouldn't make any image whatsoever that could be worshipped. This lav over here, again, the Sefer Chinuch is focusing his attention on the Tzuras Adam aspect. Shalom Naso, so klal afilonoi, we can't make pictures of human beings even for just to look nice. Vizel aharchik avozar, just like you said, it's to make us give us more distance between us and avodah zarah.
A stick figure.
Because that's a stick figure. It doesn't really look like a person. That's just a diagram. It has to be something that really looks like a person. Like it says right now, dinei hamitzvah. The lochos of the mitzvah are as follows. Kigon ha'osa tzuras adam choser eiver echad o yoser madino. Let's say you intentionally take off a piece of the body or add an extra limb to make a three-armed person. That would be okay. It has to be something that looks like a real human being. And in fact, we pointed out a few weeks ago that according to the way the Ramah paskins in the Shulchan Aruch, although not all authorities agree to this, that it has to be an absolutely complete image of a sculpture or a statue of a person with nothing missing and everything there. Otherwise, it's permissible. It's like a bust of just the head would be, according to the Ramah, says that the way he paskins, he says that's the minhag, that is permissible. That's why we point out that many Jewish institutions have busts in them. But not everybody accepts that. But if you make some obvious flaw in whatever part, you know, you're in the image that you're making, then it would be okay. But yes, sir, Prata, the rest of the laws, Mivarim, Beperek, Shlishi, Me Avodah Zarah. This is to be found in the third parak of Tractate of Avodah Zarah, Masechet Sanhedrin also. Amru Zichron of the Racha, Shalav Azeh, Kol El Inyanim Acherim. So this prohibition includes other things, including Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zahav, meaning that there's another level interpretation that Chazal given this pasuk, which means that you shouldn't make Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zahav. Elohim can also mean judges, so it's another instruction for the Dayanim not to take bribes. But it's the simple understanding is the way the mitzvah is presented. Omnam Ikar Alav B'Mash Zacharnu, this is the main point of this pasuk, is to tell us this prohibition. The Chein Amru B'Mechilta, one of the earliest midrashim, is the Mechilta, which is an interpretation of Sefer Shmos, and it goes pasuk by pasuk, and it tells you all the halachos that are learned out from each pasuk.
Also, many synagogues going back have the zodiac as decorations. According to those who say,
well, let's see. The zodiacs are not really images of stars, though. The things that the stars represent. So there's the scorpion and
Pisces, Taurus.
Right. They're all pictures. They all represent animals and people, like the Virgin and the Mosnayim. They're just images. They're not really images of the stars themselves and the fish. So also there's an exception if you're making an astronomy textbook. So it says that Rabbi Gamliel, when he would test the witnesses for the Kiddush HaChodesh, used to have pictures of the moon. He would say, did it look like this or like this or like this? So he said that it's mutter to do it for purposes of learning and instruction. So if you're an astronomy textbook is permissible. It's only to decorate your room with random pictures of stars and then the sun and the moon is a problem. So it's applicable in all places and all times for men and women. If we violated this and you made a human figure even for just decorative purposes, you violated the will of the king, but there's no prohibition of Malkus. Why not? Why shouldn't there be lashes for this? There's Yeshbo Maisa. There's an action involved. You go ahead and make it. So it's not clear. The Rambam says there is Malkus. First of all, normally the Chinuch tells you when he disagrees with the Rambam. Here he just doesn't say anything. It's very strange. So that some suggest that the Chinuch might think that this is what's called a lav shebiklolos. If there's a one mitzvah, if there's one lav that contains different aspects to it, so it has to depends on the tradition telling you if you receive Malkus for which parts. So since it contains many parts, sometimes there's no Malkus at all involved in a lav shebiklolos.
Maybe he just means you don't get Malkus if you own it, as opposed to if you make it.
No, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say that. For sure, if you don't do a maisa, for sure you wouldn't get Malkus. There's no earthly punishment. You're not supposed to have it lying around, no. Yeah.
But there has to be a head there, because everyone collects dolls.
But the dolls aren't... What do you mean, like the Russian dolls that with a little...
No, I mean like...
Those aren't real. Those are not real images of people.
No, but like a little doll that little girls carry. Yeah,
that's the story about Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman, who was one of the big tzaddikim of early 20th century America. He was ahead of his time in his right-wing religious practices, something that, you know, was very far into early 20th century America, would have been more at home perhaps in Lakewood today. So he used to, when he would buy his kids dolls, he would like rip off the ears or the nose or something to make a defect. So they wouldn't violate the prohibition of owning these impermissible images. So the next mitzvah is mitzvah mem, the 40th mitzvah. Shelo livnos avnei mizbeach gozis, to not to make the altar out of hewn stone. So shelo nivne mizbeach me'avonim sheyiga bahem barzel. Not only are we not allowed to hew the stones of the mizbeach out of larger stones, but we cannot even use a stone at all that was touched with iron at all. Even if you just tap it with iron, you can no longer use it for the mizbeach, because it says, in addition to the main part of the pasuk where it says shenemar lo sivnes hen gozis, you should not make them of hewn stone. It says in the end ki charbecha heinafto aleh, because you raised your sword upon it. So even that is considered to be not permissible for the stones of the mizbeach. Perush gozis, what does hewn stone mean? Kishiposli min ha'evin b'chli barzel means to cut up the stones with a iron tool. V'imnivne b'avne gozis pasul, if the mizbeach was built with hewn stone, then it is a pasul mizbeach. It's not, yeah? Yeah, nothing. Yeah.
But a laser.
They used to gather really small, smooth stones, but they used to, I guess nowadays we could use lasers. In theory, we could use lasers as long as we don't touch it with any sort of metal. What? Okay, b'shor she mitzvah zo. The reasoning for this mitzvah is shenikba b'nafshoseinu she miyom asoso she b'si baso tovolanu mechilas avon v'abracha v'ashalom achrichein. That from the day that it's made, the thing that is going to bring us atonement for our sins and blessing and peace afterwards, valkein. Lizkor ze'adavar, in order to remember the fact that the Mizbeach brings us peace, nitztavinu, shelo la'asos bo'davar klal bekelim hamuchanim la'ashchasa. So we can't have anything to do with the Mizbeach with any destructive tools. V'zehu ha'barzel shekorei sumuchan tamid lishboch dam. Iron is what causes people to, normally the tools are used in war, made of iron. So that's why we should, there should be no connection whatsoever between iron and the altar, which is extends the people's lives. Again, the Sefer Chinuch's famous statement that a person goes, his mind follows his actions. His thoughts follow always his actions. So we should do actions that lead us to the proper thought and the proper intent that we should have when doing mitzvos. So if we take care not to use any iron tools on the Mizbeach, so we'll keep more in our heads that the Mizbeach is something that should not be associated at all with war, and it brings us blessings and peace, etc. The Asachal, the stupid person, HaMavil Dvarim Elo Lo Yada V'Lo Yavin, who makes light of this thing, doesn't know and doesn't understand. Pretty harsh words, again, somebody who doesn't really accept the idea of that one's thoughts following one's actions. Dine HaMitzvah Lachos Ar, Kigon Mehechan Hayu Mevino San HaAvonim Shibonim Ben HaMizbeach. Before the advent of lasers, where did they get these stones that they would build the Mizbeach? Shamru Zichronim Livracha. The Mishnah in Midos tells us, Min Besulas Karka. So from earth that had never been plowed, they would just dig until they got to a layer that contained plenty of stones. Omin Ayama Godol, from the ocean. There are, you know, stones lying around in the ocean. Hayu Mevinosan, they would bring them. Vedin Imnoga Barzel Bevin Acher Shenivnes B'Hamizbeach. So what happens if you touch a stone of the Mizbeach with iron after it was built already, yeah? So what happens if you touch a stone of the Mizbeach with iron after the Mizbeach is built already? Imposelas Hakol Ohi Levada Psula. So the halacha is that just that one stone is no longer good. It's all, you have to take that stone out of the Mizbeach, but the rest of the Mizbeach is okay. It doesn't undo the kosherness of the rest of the altar. Umash Amru Zichronim Livracha Kishem Melabdenes HaMizbeach Pamayim B'Shana. So they used to clean or plaster over the Mizbeach twice a year because we get very dirty, obviously, with all the blood sprinkled on it and etc. So they used to do this twice a year. So yilabnu beklishi shelo yilabnu beklishi yehebo barzel kadesh oligar barzel bevin. So one should not use any type of tool that contains iron for cleaning or plastering over the Mizbeach. Because maybe the iron, even if you're not really using the iron part to do the work that you need to do, if there's any part of it that's iron, it might touch the altar accidentally, and then that would create problems, obviously. V'yeser prateh mevorim b'maseches midos. Maseches midos is the tractate of the Mishnah that talks about the dimensions and specifications of the Beis HaMikdash, so it's discussed there. V'noeges bizman habayis bizchar mu'nekevos. Obviously, it only applies when the Beis HaMikdash is standing, for to men and women. The overall leovano even shenoga ba'barzel ba'mizbeach o ba'kevesh loka. So if you violate this mitzvah, let's say you take a stone and you cut it in two, or you touch it with any type of iron implement, and then you use it to build the mizbeach or the ramp that goes up to the altar, which is considered basically part of the altar itself, then you would receive the penalty of lashes as the normal penalty for any violation of any negative commandment. Okay. Mitzvah Mem Aleph, the 41st mitzvah, Shelo Lifsoa al HaMizbeach, not to step on the Mizbeach. So what does that mean? That doesn't sounds a little funny, so what does it really mean? Shelo Lalos al HaMizbeach B'Madrigos, we should not walk up to the Mizbeach with steps, obviously they didn't build steps, they had a ramp, but there shouldn't be steps used in order to walk up to the altar at all. Kidei shelo yase pesios gasos baloso. So you shouldn't have to take wide steps when you go up to the mizbeach. Shenemar velo salev emalos al mizbechi. Don't go up with steps to my altar. Asher lo si goler vaschalav. So your nakedness should not be uncovered upon the mizbeach. Ela keshehu ole sham. Even if you're walking up the ramp, mahalech benachas uviyira. You should go really slowly. Calmly and with fear. Okay, bitzad gudol, you shouldn't take a big step. You should just, you know, when you take your heel should be by your toe, then your heel by toe, heel by toe, heel by toe. So just 1 foot in front of the other without space in between. Kach ne'amar b'mechilta, again in the Mechilta, it says this explicitly. Mishor she'mitzvah zo, the reason for this mitzvah is, mashikosavnu b'mitzvah kodemis, so it's the same idea of the state of mind we should have as regards the altar. likboa benaf shosenu yiras hamakom v'chashivuso, to establish in our souls the fear of the place and its importance. Balkein huzharnu shelo linhog sham kalus rosh b'shum inyan. So we shouldn't be lightheaded in any way when surrounding the mizbeach. This is nothing to do with, we're not taking care not to offend the stones of the Mizbeach, that we should be immodest on top of the stones, because they don't care. Shena rose v'lo shomos, obviously they can't see and they can't hear. Elokoha inyan laseis tzior b'libeinu, it's the instill within us the proper attitude. B'yiras hamokom v'chashivuso chvodo agodol, the fear of the place and its importance and its great honor. From our actions, the heart follows. Kemoshe goes after, as I wrote. Dine ha-mitzvah, the lechos of the mitzvah, keitzad osin ha-kevesh, kedei shelo yavo lavor ala b'lavzeh, in order the specifications of the ramp to prevent people from taking too big a step. V'tzurasu v'chol inyano, all this stuff we're getting relating to the ramp of the altar, mevorim b'perek shlishi mimidos. Again, the third parak of Tractate Midos. And apparently there's a girsa that gets rid of the word nekevos, because women aren't allowed to go up to the altar anyway. Only the Kohanim are allowed to go up on the altar.
So why did they have stairs in front
of them? But suppose you did it, I guess, if a woman ran into the Beis HaMikdash and she started running up the altar, then she, in addition to violating the prohibition of being there, then she would violate also the prohibition of not walking too far out, not too big steps on the Mizbeach.
Rabbi, I have some difficulty understanding.
Okay.
The connection between the reason of the Tachino cave and the Sigurai of Oskong, and it must be revealed. Yeah, I don't think he'd be really tied to that, did he?
Well, I guess if you don't take care to act with modesty, then it's not a real, you didn't really take to heart the fear that you should have for being in the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay.
You're right, he didn't tie it in explicitly, but I think that's the message, right?
I don't know.
Let's
suppose he came fully clothed with 7 layers of underwear and 1 up steps. Would you be aware?
I'm going to get into that in 1 second. That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. The Chinuch seems to has a funny lesson about this. He says, "Va'over alea ufasa psia gaso al hamizbeach." So you violate this, and you took a big step on top of the mizbeach. Ad shenigla ervaso, until your nakedness was literally revealed. The mezid loke. If you did it on purpose, you receive the penalty of lashes. Now, as far as, again, I'm not an expert in Maseches Midos, but as far as I could tell, the Chinuch is the only source that actually qualifies, that actually takes the pasuk literally, that you actually are not over the mitzvah until you actually uncover your literal nakedness in on top of the mizbeach. Most of the other commentators just assume if you take huge steps on top of the mizbeach, then you violate the prohibition. The pasuk is telling you the reason that you have to act with modesty, but it's not a literal thing. And again, I also don't understand how it could be that you could literally be, unless you're wearing, you know, a very short skirt with nothing underneath, how could you take a huge step and reveal your nakedness on the mizbeach? Like I said, most people, even the Kohanim, they had to wear underwear, and they wore long garments, so I'm not sure. The Sefer Chinuch to me is, I have not found anyone who discusses this, but I who discusses the issue that the Sefer Chinuch seems to be the only source that seems to take this so literally. So the Sefer Chinuch concludes this mitzvah with Va'anovim Yishkenu Aretz, which is not a pasuk. It sounds like it should be a pasuk, but it's a combination of two different psukim. The basic thrust meaning those who are humble will live in the land. An admonition that one should be humble and modest. So Parshas Mishpatim, where we're going, Ve'ele ha-mishpatim yish ba sheish esrei mitzvos aseh. There are 16 mitzvos aseh, u'shmone mitzvos lo aseh, and 8 negative commandments. Mitzvah membeis, the 42nd mitzvah, is mitzvahs din evet ivri. a Hebrew slave. Ladun. So there's a difference between an Eved Ivri and an Eved Kanani. An Eved Ivri, a Hebrew slave, is just a regular Jewish person who we'll see has, you know, can't afford to continue living, or he stole something, can't afford to pay back. So either in the first case, he sells himself to the master because he can't afford to live, and he sells himself out as a slave. Or if he stole something, can't afford to pay back, then the court is obligated to sell him to a to another Jew. In theory, in the first place, he could sell himself to a goy also, in which case he would be the goy slave. He still has to keep all the mitzvos. But that's very much not recommended. Really, if anyone's going to own a Jewish slave, it should be another Jew. This is opposed, of course, to an Eved Kanani, who's a non-Jewish slave, who, when he enters the ownership of a Jew, has to go to the mikvah, and the male has to be circumcised, and he becomes partly Jewish, halfway Jewish, to the extent he's obligated in all the mitzvot that a woman's obligated in. In other words, exempt from time-bound positive commandments, but he's still a little Jewish. He's considered to be, and if he goes free, then he becomes a full Jew. So it's almost a halfway conversion of sorts. But that's not what we're talking about right now. So, ladun b'din evrit ivri kimo shekasu aparsha. We should treat a Hebrew slave as is written in our parsha. Our parsha does not talk about non-Jewish slaves, it only talks about a Jewish slave. Shenemar, ki sikne evrit ivri, the parsha ve'la mishpatim, starts out with when you buy a Hebrew slave, kilomar shenaselo advarim shenitztavinu bahen. We should do the things for the Eved Ivri that were commanded in the beginning of the parsha. Kigon l'shalcho b'shvius, that he is not talking about the shvius, meaning the shmita year. We also call the shmita year the shvius, but he has to work for you for 6 years, and then you have to send him free at the on the seventh year. However, the regular Shemitah doesn't free an Eved Ivri, but the Jubilee year does, which is every 50th year as opposed to every 7th year. Oh, begeron kesef. Or let's say, for example, that the slave, the master bought the slave for 60 dinarim, let's say. So if the master bought the slave for 60 dinarim, so let's say after 3 years, that translates basically to 10 dinarim a year. So let's say after 3 years, the slave manages to save up 30 dinarim to pay for the rest of the price of the time that he's supposed to be with his master. Then he could give the master the price that's remaining in the time that he's supposed to be a slave, and then he could also go free in that way. Oh, b'misas adon shelo hiniach ben zachar, or if the master dies and did not leave a male child, a son, to carry on the slave, and even in other words, even if he didn't leave a son, then certainly his other relatives would inherit, the daughters if there are no sons, but never, or if he had no children at all, then his wife or then his father would inherit him. But even so, the slave would go free. It's only the only time that a Hebrew slave transfers possession to in terms of inheritance is if from a father to a son. Ula nirtza gamken kedinu akosubo. There's a case, of course, where the slave likes being a slave. So this is the famous nirtza, when the slave decides he likes being a slave at the end of the 6 years. So he says to the master, I like being your slave, please keep me as your slave. So the master goes and bores a hole in the slave's ear. So we have to buy into the door. So in that case, we have to do according to what it says in the parsha as well. Hakol kemosha limdun rabbi Sainu zichron levracha. That's the rabbis interpreted the laws that are set forth in this mitocha kasuv in the parsha. Kemosha meforesh perek rishon mikidushin. The laws of the Eved Ivri are discussed in the first parak of Kiddushin. Why? As the Mishnah starts in Kiddushin, Ha'isha nikneis b'shal shrachim, a woman could be married in 3 ways, and v'konas atzma b'shnei drachim, and requires her, quote-unquote, freedom in 2 ways, then her independence from the husband in this case. So the Mishnah lists other cases where someone's purchased in a... acquired, but not that a woman is acquired when she gets married, but certain times when a relationship is created with a certain number of ways, and then the relationship is ended in a certain number of ways. So the Mishnah tells us, not that it has anything to do with marriage per se, but just along the same format, that an Eved Ivri can be acquired with through these ways, and he acquires his freedom, or the relationship is severed with through these things that we just enumerated, or if he pays the difference, or his master dies, etc. So just in the same way that a woman could be married with through monetary, something of monetary value, or through a document, or through sexual relations, and she her relationship with her husband is severed through a get, or if the husband dies, and the same, and on the analogy, the Mishnah doesn't necessarily tell us things that are only related in terms of the subject being discussed, but sometimes it tells you other things that, where the halachos are presented in the same format. Here in this case, the creation of a relationship and the severance of a relationship. Mishor she mitzvah zo, the reasoning for this mitzvah is as follows. Shiratzu hakel, sheye amo, Yisrael asher bachar am kadosh. God wants the Jewish people that he chose to be a holy nation. Mole umu'utar b'chol midas tovos umulos, should be filled and crowned with all positive character traits. Ki mitoch kach tachula bracha aleihem, through the fact that the whole society is dealing with each other with proper midos, then the society, the Jewish society, will be subject to blessing. That's why the Mefarshim say that Parshas Mishpatim comes right out of the Ten Commandments. Right after the Ten Commandments, tell you that in addition to the mitzvahs ben adam lamakom, these important theological concepts, society has to run normally, has to be run well in order to create a proper world. The achesed ve'arachamim, and mercy and doing kindness to each other. Min hamidos hamechshubachol shebolam. Those are the best character traits imaginable. The alkein, he's iranu lerachem ala shehu tachas yodeinu v'ligmolo chesed. So God requires us to deal kindly with people who are under our jurisdiction, in this case, slaves. Kasher kosu v'parsha k'moshi yodanu gamkin v'kabola. That is explicit in our parsha and is also certainly a received tradition. Dinei ha-mitzvah, lochos of the mitzvah, kegon achilukim shebein mocher atzmo limcharu bezdin. So there are, as I said, there are two cases of an Eved Ivri, one where he sells himself and one where the bezdin sells him. So there are certain halachos that are different between the two. So one example is that if a person sells himself, then, I'm sorry, if a person is sold by the bezdin, so he's allowed to, his master can give him a wife from a non-Jewish slave as a wife. In other words, a woman who's his slave was originally not Jewish and now, as I said, became an Eved Kanani, and she's partway Jewish. So normally, a full Jewish person is not allowed to marry or have relations with a slave. So that's one exception where an Eved Ivri who was sold by the Bezdin is allowed to marry a slave. But someone who sold himself because he couldn't afford to go on living is not allowed to marry a non-Jewish slave. Or a partly Jewish slave, I should say. Like any other Jew. So then, Eved Varm Shu Nikne Bohem. So a person is acquired through something in monetary value or through a shtar, a document, where basically he writes on the document, I so-and-so sell myself to you so-and-so, hands the person the document, and on the completion of that transaction, the person becomes his slave. V'eshu yotze bohen l'cheirus, in what manner is the person granted his freedom? Again, we already discussed some of those. Ushar dinav. And the rest of the halachos, mevorim sham b'kiddushin. Again, they're all explained in Maseches Kiddushin. V'noheges mitzvah zo b'zchar mevavolo b'nekevos. It's talking about, in terms of dealing, it's not talking about the Eved Ivri himself, but it's talking about the owner of the Eved Ivri. So the mitzvahs on how to deal with the Eved Ivri are applicable to males, but not to females. What's the reason for that? Shein ho'isha kona Eved Ivri. A woman cannot buy an Eved Ivri because it looks a little suspicious and strange. That a woman wants to own a man walking around her house. It looks like she purchased him for other reasons than to tend her garden, shall we say. V'davka bizman shi Yisrael shruyin al admasam. The din of Eved Ivri is only, it's only in a time where the yovel is applicable when the Jubilee year, because an Evadivri has to go free when the Jubilee year comes, so it's tied into the Jubilee year. So the Yovel is only applicable when all the entire Jewish people is in the land of Israel. But the Yovel has been practiced for a very, very long time, even from the Golis of the first tribes that went into Golis. Went into exile, we no longer have a Jubilee year. Shekein bo ha-peirush, ha-mekubel she'ein Eved Ivri noeg ela bizman sha-yovel noeg. The din of Eved Ivri is only applicable in a time where there's a Yovel. In other words, that hasn't been applicable for a very long time nowadays. It's no longer possible to purchase an Eved Ivri. Sorry, those of you who were starting to pique their interest in potentially getting their housework lightened, burden lightened for them. Uleferishu shedin ha-yovel einu ela ba'aretz. But, of course, the Jubilee year is only when people are in the land of Israel, and it's only applicable in the land of Israel. That's, of course, in opposition to an Eved Kanani, which in theory, at least, it's definitely illegal in most Western societies, but in theory, it's halakhically possible to have an Eved Kanani even nowadays. I think there were some Jewish plantation owners in the South, in the antebellum South, before the Civil War, where they treated their slaves as Eved Kanani. They did all, they went to the slaves, they circumcised them, they took them to the mikvah, and they were real Eved Kanani. V'over aleha, v'lo aso la'eved mashekosu bo bital asei. You violate his mitzvah, and you don't treat the Eved Ivri appropriately, you violated the positive commandment. V'gam melamed nafsho lios achzari. You're also teaching yourself to be cruel. You're calling your yichus into question. Because Jewish people are merciful people, the children are merciful people, and if you show that you're cruel, then you are perhaps suggesting the fact that you might not even really be Jewish. Obviously, it's not literal, but it's showing that there's something wrong with your Jewish nature if you're not merciful like this. In fact, the Gemara says, There are more halachos about Eved Ivri, which the Sefer Chinuch doesn't go into here, presumably because it's not so applicable, so it's only giving you the most bare details. But in terms of the way you're supposed to treat the Eved Ivri, the Gemara tells us that someone who buys an Eved Ivri, it's as if he buys a master, because you have to treat the Eved Ivri so well. In other words, you're not supposed to sleep on a proper bed. If your slave doesn't have a proper bed, you're not supposed to have him. Basically, you're supposed to treat the Eved Ivri like any other Jew, and he's supposed to treat himself as a slave. So you're not supposed to make him do really detestable work. You're not supposed to just make him work for nothing. You're not supposed to just say, dig a ditch, fill in the ditch, dig a ditch, fill in the ditch. You're not supposed to say, just keep weeding my garden until I come back. And then he just has to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. He doesn't know when he's going to end. That's considered torturous. Say either you just weed this section of the garden and then you're done, or you say you weed for 2 hours and then you're done. You have to put some end point to the person's malacha so as not to torture them.